Yesterday in the sanctuary, we celebrated the life of one of the saints of our church, Ann McCall. Ann died earlier in the summer after a very full 98 years of life. So yesterday we heard stories about her life, about what she was like as a mom, and the impact she made here at Edgewood. In preparing for yesterday's service, I started thinking about all the change Anne had lived through. She was born just after World War I, which means she came of age during World War II, and then witnessed a continual cycle of war in this country since 1950. She lived through political battles, political upsets, protests, riots, resignations, assassinations, social progress, and human rights setbacks. She experienced more technological innovations and inventions than we can possibly imagine. The year she was born, 1921, was the year the first robot was invented. And this year, we all walk around with tiny robots in our pockets named Siri and Alexa. Here is what is most remarkable. Through all that she lived through and changes in the world around her that she experienced, not a single story told yesterday was about fear. When we held up her legacy and the values she lived by, fear was not a part of it. And I know she's not the only one. All of our elders with us and the ones we have lost in the last several years are testimonies to the human capacity to bear witness to great and terrible things and to end up on the other side, still living, still hoping, still loving. The importance of these testimonies of our elders cannot be understated. It doesn't mean that there weren't scary periods or times when they wondered if the country would ever feel safe again. But it's a reminder to those of us who are younger to not get so overwhelmed that we lose sight of the long view. Often, when we talk about how we're going to make it through the national crisis of the moment, whether injustice in the immigration system, gun violence run rampant, or racism that is as old as the country itself, we ask aloud, where's the next Martin Luther King Jr.? Where's our next justice hero? Where's the person who will save us? We assume that to make it to the other side, we need someone, or maybe a group of someones, to show us the path forward, to make those big sweeping changes to save the day. That kind of leadership may indeed come, but we're called to do more than wait to be rescued and despair over the state of things in the meantime. Our gospel passage this morning starts out with Jesus telling his disciples, "Fear not, little flock." The disciples are concerned about the future. What is going to happen if and when Jesus leaves them? What their lives will be, and who will protect them? They had good reason to be afraid. They were a minority group with no power, whose leader was going around and angering all the government authorities. The message to not be afraid was timely, responding to the stress, anxiety, and worries of the uncertainty before them. Does that feel familiar to us today? Jesus' instructions to the disciples for how to move through their fear is the same instructions I have witnessed through so many of our elders. Focus on what is most important in your life. Spend your energy and invest your time in the things you need to do to be healthy and strong, knowing that there is very little you can control, so all you can do is the best with what you can control. Jesus was specific in what he told them to do. First of all, sell all your possessions and give all the money to people who are poorer than you. And then make purses for your treasure. We might say wallet instead of purse. But make it for treasure that won't wear out, can't be stolen, and won't crumple from being eaten by moths. In other words, your treasure, what you value most, should be something more substantial than material objects. He is essentially saying that money and fancy cars and the newest phone or the biggest TV are not what is important. Don't worry so much about those things. Don't waste your energy on them. They're not what is going to save your life. They're not going to save the life of someone else in need. So as best as you are able, leave them behind. Jesus teaches that the way to move through and beyond fear is to prepare spiritually, to be grounded in our values and to know what we believe in. Know what justice looks like to you and how you are specifically called to respond to it. Know the ways in which you are called to love your neighbor and to love God. Know your capacity and ability to love through actions and words and presence. Being ready isn't just about sitting idle. It's about strengthening the skills we need so that when we are called on to respond, to be present with God in times of disaster or trauma or pain, we are willing and able to be present. So I want to invite us to think about those practices in our life that help us move past the fear. And this morning I want to open it up. I want to hear from you because I think that right now we need to call in our community and to hear from our experiences, to hear from the folks who are maybe recognizing, yep, this is a pretty terrible time, but we've been here before and we can move past it, and here's how I know that. Because we know where the fear is in our society and in our communities. We know what there is to fear. We hear plenty about that in the news. But how do you build resilience? What are the things you do that help you to get beyond the fear? How have you kept going through the wars and attacks and setbacks and violence? When you hear Jesus say, "Fear not, little flock," what does that remind you to do? How do you call yourself back to your values and your purpose, to God's love and belief in you? So I'm going to read a poem by Wendell Berry and offer this up perhaps as his response to the question, how do you move beyond the fear? And then I'm going to come out into the pews and I want to invite us into conversation with our own responses. So this is Wendell Berry's answer. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free.